House Committee on Business and Labor. And I'm going to get out of order here, and I'm going to have a work session on House Bill 3600 and a work session on House Bill 3654 first. So I'll open work session, House Bill 3600.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we had to carry over House Bill 3600 from Wednesday's hearing because we were waiting for the fiscal impact analysis. The measure allows counties to charge an additional fee for premium services in excess of the actual cost of developing a processing a development review permit and establishes a sunset date of January 2nd, 2015. There is a -1 amendment in front of you which expands the measure scope to include cities. There is no revenue impact on either the original or the -1 amendment. There is a fiscal statement that has been issued for the -1. It is indeterminate as the measure engrossed into the bill makes the bill permissive versus mandatory. So it's impossible for the cities and counties to determine how much it would cost them.
Okay, we have the proponents. I think the departments here. We have the proponents of the bill. Are there any questions?
Yeah, I'm here.
This is Bill.
Are you a proponent?
That would be called.
We screwed up. We have the proponent.
I've never known him.
Are there any questions about this bill? Are there any objections to this bill as written?
We have to move the amendment.
Representative Pesco.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we adapt. Adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3600.
Representative Esquel moves to adopt the -1 amendments into House Bill 3600. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Esquel.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3600 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquel moves House Bill 360024 as amended with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? All right. Seeing none, so moved. And, Representative, would you like to carry this bill again?
Sure.
Okay, great. I don't think we have a consent calendar, but
this would be a great consent calendar.
All right, I'm going to close work session House Bill 3600, and I'm going to open work session House Bill 3654. And the proponents of the bill are in the audience. Would you describe the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3654 allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services, upon the request of a mortgage insurer, to waive requirements regarding the ratio of aggregate insurance policies that are issued to surplus of policyholders. The -1 amendment that was discussed at Wednesday's meeting adds some clarifications to the measure. To highlight a couple of items, it does clarify that a mortgage insurer can request a waiver extension for a period not to exceed 2 years and also requires the department to charge a fee for the waiver request for purposes of reimbursing the cost of reviewing such requests. We were waiting for the fiscal analysis. There's no revenue impact, and there's a minimal fiscal impact with the -1 amendment.
Okay. Any questions? Would someone like to
move the -1?
Representative Barton.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3654.
Representative Barton moves we adopt -1 amendments to House Bill 3654. Is there any questions, discussion? Is there any objections to the motion? So moved. Representative Barton.
Chair, I moved House Bill 3654 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 3654 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Representative, you want to hear the bill on floor?
I'm happy to, Chair.
Very good. Close work session, House Bill 3654. So we're...
We can start. That's probably best if we start.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Amy Sheets.
You know, I think David has a packet for me. I'm out of sorts.
We'll get you a packet.
Right now. Okay, good. Thank you.
You want to open the hearing?
I'm going to open public hearing on House Bill 3604.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3604 requires contracting agencies to include within requests for proposals or initiations to bid for construction projects related to an interstate bridge the preference for products, materials, and components that are fabricated in close proximity to the site where in which they will be used, and to give preference for procuring goods for public use that are manufactured close to the location where they will be used. You have in front of you, members, the Dash 1 amendment, which is, replaces the entire measure. The amendment establishes a task force on regional contract preferences, which will study the viability of establishing a system within Oregon in which contracting agencies that procure the construction services must apply uniform state standards for giving preference to bidders or proposers that use construction methods, employ a workforce, and use construction materials and supplies in such a way to help the agency meet state goals for reducing atmospheric carbon emissions. The amendment outlines specific items for the task force to address, the membership roster, and task force operations. The task force will be staffed by the Department of Administrative Services, and also the task force is required to submit a report to interim legislative committees related to business and transportation no later than October 1st, 2010. The amendment would establish a sunset date of the opening day of the 76th Legislative Assembly. You do have in front of you, members, a no revenue impact in the original measure and the Dash 1. There is a fiscal issued on the Dash 1 with minimal fiscal impact to some of the departments that are charged with a membership. There is a fiscal of $57,590 in general fund dollars to the Department of Administrative Services for operating and maintaining the task force.
Thank you. I have Ryan Trivett and Bob Shiprack. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Ryan.
All right. For the record, Ryan Tribbett with the Ironworkers Local 29. I want to thank you for bringing up this important piece of legislation today. Let me be the first to say I understand that the construction industry gets very nervous when they see words like greenhouse gas reduction. In
You're not alone with that.
Including our organization. I believe that's why this is a good, cautious step forward. The goal here is to see if this is a place where the goals of the environmental movement to reduce emissions can merge and coincide with the labor movement's desire to buy locally, procure materials locally. The original bill, if you look at that, had a number of unanswered questions and would probably create a scenario where it would grant broad rulemaking authority to each contracting agency to develop their own system. That makes us and a lot of other organizations very nervous, so we thought it would be good to take a step back, do a feasibility study to see if it is possible to even implement such a system. There's a lot of moving parts, federal restrictions on a lot of this stuff, but this effort towards the greenhouse emission reductions is new, hasn't been tried in any other state that we know of. The way that we designed the panel was so it would be driven by the construction industry. We pulled from membership of building codes boards. We pulled from membership of engineering boards, architect boards. There are only two agency people on it. Each of the members that are pulled from the boards are voted on by that board, so it's not a top-down thing. It will be driven by the construction industry, and it will have to come back with proposals that would need to be implemented and approved by the legislature, so it's not so there is no fear that we are granting some sort of authority that will be rules will be made and implemented without being fully vetted before this body. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob, before you go, I'm going to let the representative.
Good
morning, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Jules Bailey, representing House District 42. It's good to be back in front of you, and it's an honor to be up here with my good friends in labor in the Building and Construction Trades Council. I'll keep it very brief because you've heard from me before on this bill. I want to save time for the folks that are working very hard on getting this bill right, give them a chance to talk. But I want to frame this by saying this bill is about looking for an answer, and I think it's an answer that we're all looking for. How do we increase jobs in Oregon? How do we support businesses in Oregon? How do we make sure that manufacturers and those who are producing products here in Oregon have the ability to get their goods in these projects that are happening statewide? How do we make sure that we have projects that are happening across the state that are providing the most economic benefit to our state? And this bill is about trying to find that answer and about making sure that we have the ability to say to the workforce in Oregon and to the producers in Oregon, hey, we've got your back. And that's what we are trying to accomplish here. We're trying to look for some creative and new ways to do that. And I really appreciate our partners in labor in coming forward and helping us find that answer.
Before the representative, do you have to go or can you stay for a minute?
I can stay for a few minutes. Mr. Chair, I am in Revenue Committee, though.
All right. Well, let me ask you a question, and then I'm just going to cut you loose. But here's the thing. First of all, we have a $58,000 fiscal on this, and we're going to wait until after the revenue forecast before we pass anything out. But I just want to let you know how I feel about this stuff. I'm all for a process, but I'm for a process that helps us get from A to B and accomplish something. I'm not interested in any process that comes out of this that makes it more difficult to do things or gives anybody a blunt object to hit us over the head or creates a third-party lawsuit. I'm very skittish about that. Now, that being said, I think the spirit and the concept in this bill is leading us and could lead us in the right direction, but I just wanted to give you my reservations about that because I'm not interested in creating something that allows otherwise good people to get in the way of progress building America. I just wanted to I had to share that with you. I feel much better now, and if you want to respond to that, I would love to hear it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd just respond very briefly by saying I agree with those sentiments, and that's one of the reasons I was very happy to see this bill land in your committee, Mr. Chair, because of the experience that all of you have with dealing with exactly that issue.
Does anybody have questions of the representative before he goes? All right. Thank you, sir.
All right, Bob. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Bob Shiprack, Oregon Building Trades Council. I think the two previous speakers more than adequately summed up what we're trying to accomplish. We've been in front of this committee many times over the last few sessions dealing with the issue of how can we learn how to get more jobs for Oregon or at least American workers and contractors and business people. We've never had the discussion, though, and this bill would get us in the room together, get the attorneys there. We've got, as Rep. Barton pointed out, we've got some constitutional issues, there's legal issues, there's trade issues, there's all kinds of issues wrapped up in this. But in order for you folks to move forward with good public policy based upon sound principles and legal footings, we've got to have that discussion. And I want to just reiterate what the chair just said. If at the end of the day we don't find the answer, and I hope we do, but if we don't, and if it appears we've done more harm than good, I'll be the first one to say we tried, it didn't work, and we'll just go a different route. But I totally agree with what the chair is trying to do. We're going to have our employers at the table trying to figure this issue out. But as we've spoken in various committees around here, even this limited session, the world has changed, and we feel that we need to find a way to try and get more work for both labor and management in this state because of the way that the things have changed in the procurement of goods. So I'll stop there, and maybe we can get an answer that we can all agree to. Thank you.
Any questions, these gentlemen? Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All righty, then. I have Diane, I have three on the sheet. I'm just going to bring them all up here. Diane Lancaster, John Rakowitz, and Scott Winkles. If anyone else would like to testify on House Bill 3604 today, just let me know. Go ahead, Diane, when you're ready.
All right. Representative Schaffer, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Diane Lancaster. I'm the Chief Procurement Officer at the Department of Administrative Services State Procurement Office. And I'm pleased to be here today. House Bill 3604, you understand that it is creating a study. We have submitted a fiscal impact, and the main issue that we have, problems that we have at the Department of Administrative Services is that, first of all, we do not do much construction work. Through 279A.150, which is the construction statute that parcels out a good deal of authority, we have ODOT, we have many, many agencies who have independent authority from us, and I would say that covers darn near 100% of state government. So our expertise in this area is limited. The fiscal does include services of lawyers. Did consult with the Department of Justice about what kind of legal help they would recommend, and the fiscal does include that. What it does not include, in addition to our lack of construction expertise, is the support staff, project management staff that would be needed to get this study up and running and help this group pull together a meaningful report and implementation plan for the interim session. So our main concern is resource, and with that, I think I'll thank you, and if they have any questions, I'll be glad to
answer. Go ahead,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. The League of Oregon Cities, has, we've had an opportunity to look at some of the amendments. We do support, the League does support the concept of a study to discuss how we can better address GHG emissions, how we can better use Oregon's public dollars to employ Oregonians and buy Oregon products, and also as a means to talk about ways to achieve efficiency in governmental contracting. The critique that I would offer on the study is that the membership of the panel does seem overly prescriptive. Local governments in the amendment don't appear to be represented on the panel, and we believe that should be addressed. Local governments around the state do provide a significant amount of public contracts, and we have some expertise and we have useful input on the table. Additionally, on the comment, I would like to state for the record that after listening to the testimony on this bill in January, we heard a couple of things that we thought we could address. One, there seemed to be a part of the frustration on some members of the some stakeholders and members of the committee that there was some prohibition on local preferences, and we've done some research on the issue of local preferences, and we've found that there are a number of states that have successfully enacted a local preference in public contracting and purchasing. I'm going to draw your attention to one particular. The state of Alaska has a 7% local preference for the purchase of dairy products in their schools. I bring that one up because it has actually withstood a court challenge in the circuit court. For the lawyers on the committee, the case is Big Country Foods Inc. v. Anchorage School Board. What the League would respectfully suggest as this process bill moves forward is that we discuss the possibility of including a 7% local preference in public contracting that would be permissible and non-mandatory, so that a public agency could, if it was appropriate, give this preference, get away from the lease cost, and give some advantage to an Oregon company. There are some cities who would very much like to do this. For instance, the city of Gresham would like to give a preference to their local solar manufacturer, so they would regard it as a good thing if they could write their RFPs in such a way as that if the product was made locally or within the state of Oregon, that they could provide some preference. We look forward to continuing that conversation with the stakeholders and with members, with the Representative Bailey. With that, I'm eager for your questions.
Thank you. John, go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee. For the record, John Rakowitz with Associated General Contractors, Oregon Columbia Chapter. I point that out because we have the membership. Our membership includes Southwest Washington, all of the state of Oregon, so we understand something about working across state lines. I want to applaud the sponsors of this bill. We've talked to them. We've worked with them. Given the complexity of this issue, we are pleased that it is now a task force that will take a real look at this. Despite that, we have a number of issues with the Dash 1 amendments and cannot support the Task Force Dash 1 amendments in its current form. I'll quickly get to those two issues. Two critical issues for us. One, the scope of the study seems to have changed dramatically from the scope of the original Bill 3604, which was related to an interstate bridge, unnamed. And that seems to make more sense about focusing on something, a specific kind of project, when you're talking about something that's so cutting edge and new. Nobody, to our knowledge, has ever tried to do this before. So to us, that would make more sense if it actually got scoped to something, a particular project, and then you could start to make sense out of how might this work. Secondly, we believe that there's not enough general contractor representation on the task force. There's an expertise and experience that only general contractors can bring to this. They're the ones that have to pull all the parts together to make a project work, ultimately. And so, again, we applaud. We think moving towards studying something of this kind of complexity makes more sense than just going without leaping, without looking. The final thing is, we're pleased to see that there's an evaluation of the reciprocal preferences that may be imposed by other states as a part of this study. I've done some reaching out to chapters around. There's 99 chapters of AGC around the country. This is on the marketplace side. Is a very there's a word of caution I want to bring in here, because reciprocal agreements, once they start, there's some real problems with that. Right now, and I think Bob Shipback and others would agree, we've got companies and we've got tradesmen and women working out of state to try to stay alive. And I'll just end with this note. The latest statistics in our industry have a 34% decline in employment since the fall of 2008. We've gone from 117,000 jobs to 75,000 jobs, and so we understand the need for work. What we don't want to end up with is a situation where we can't work other places because people are doing the same thing for their own people, and that creates a situation that we need to really, really be cautious about. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, it's a pretty sad testimony, though, I got to tell you, especially when we have projects just waiting to go, and some nice people just refuse to help us get there. I'm not going to be out of order today, but we all know what I'm talking about. Any questions of these gentlemen?
All right, well, we're not going to do anything before Monday, and it'll probably be Wednesday.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, what will happen on the agenda, just for the audience to know, is that we will have it on the Monday agenda. I have to have it carried over that way, but we will make it clear that the bill is just there for purposes of carrying it over to Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to get back there with those guys and figure something out, John.
We talk all the time. Okay? Yeah, we'll have a conversation right after this.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Anyone else want to testify on House Bill 3604? Come on up.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, Michael Eisen with the Association of Oregon Counties. I just wanted to quickly get on record that Association of Oregon Counties supports the idea of using more local products, Oregon jobs, Oregon products. However, because counties also carry out many public contracts within the state, we'd like to see some kind of representation or input into the process as it goes forward. That's all I have. Thanks.
Any questions of this young man?
Mr. Chair, I have a question. I'm not sure it's directed at the counties. I'm just curious, a $58,000 price tag. And the proponents have any ideas on how it's going to get funded? And are we going to take it out of education? Are we going to take it out of public safety? Where is it going to come from? I didn't hear that, so I'm obviously, when the bill comes forward next time, I'd like to hear maybe how that's going to happen.
I think that's a fine question, and I think we can go ask the co-chair of that question today. So, Representative Cameron, then Representative Escobar.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, I certainly share some of your squeamishness about this issue. I think it's a critical issue. I think most of us think we ought to put Oregonians to work, and at every opportunity would be nice to use Oregon instead of Argentinian wood, and some other things, and I'll try not to get out of order. But I do appreciate you poke some folks in the eye. Some of us need it. On the other hand, we do need to be respectful and try to figure this out. One of the things that I really appreciated was the testimony from the Office of Procurement. I think honesty is a really good policy, and I appreciate very much the very straightforward suggestion that perhaps they're not the most appropriate agency to be working with, although their title sounds like it. And I so, you know, along with Representative Cameron's suggestions, I think the proponents or those who are working on the bill ought to think where might be a more logical home, or at least the support for them, because I think if they're going to move forward, we need to have people who understand the process and can support it, especially if they're going to be hiring attorneys, which it looks like that might be part of the process. So that would be my added suggestion to those who are working on it.
We have a few days to iron it out if we need to. Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with what my colleagues have said here today, but more importantly, if we're waiting on a revenue forecast, and if we have an extra $58,000, I certainly want to spend it toward education, which was shorted.
Well, that's why we have a vote. We'll see where we go. Any questions of this young man while I have him sitting here? All right. Anyone else want to testify today? All right, Joe, come on up. Anybody else? This is the last call for this bill today. Get another shot at it if you want to.
Good morning. My name is Joe Esmond. I'm a business agent for the IBW Local 48, and this was sort of my... I made an off-side comment to somebody about working with the environmental group who are very concerned about greenhouse gas emissions and everything else. This has some basis in Hire Oregon First, which is, I know, probably against the law. A number of years ago, we went out to a mill up in your neck of the woods where they're bringing out-of-state workers in to do work. We had about the same rate of unemployment. This is a pro-business bill to me, and hopefully we can get the environmental groups to come behind this instead of having ships haul stuff over, have trucks haul stuff in from West Virginia or wherever to provide services and goods, mainly the goods to do construction projects, doesn't make any sense to me. So I just had to vent. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Any questions, Joe, today?
Good points.
Okay, thanks a lot. All right, I'm going to close the public hearing, House Bill 3604. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3653.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3653 modifies certain definitions and applicable exemptions regarding an employer taking adverse employment action against an employee who declines to attend a meeting or participate in communications concerning the employer's opinion about religious or political matters. The measure also modifies damages that are available to a prevailing employee in a civil action. The measure declares the emergency effect upon passage. You have in front of you, members, a -1 amendment from the proponent. The amendment restores inadvertently deleted language during the bill drafting process, specifically in Section 1, subsection 4 of the measure, which is regarding the definition of political matters. There is no revenue impact, and with the -1 amendment, there is no fiscal impact either.
Okay. Duke, you want to?
No.
Okay. So we're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Duke Shepherd with the Oregon AFL-CIO. You heard this during your interim hearing, so I won't restate all the testimony of our president, Tom Chamberlain, when he was here. I will just sort of get to the motivations of these changes, because we did get the bill that we liked during session. There were a number of issues that were raised by legislators during session and during the interim that we pledged to do a good faith effort to come back and bring some language in 2010, and we've done that. And I think the notable ones here are the changing of religious matters definition to be consistent with Title VII, the Federal Civil Rights Act, the reduction in damages from treble damages to double back pay so that there's still a reasonable recourse for affected workers, but that it is not an inducement to excessive lawsuits. And then an additional safe harbor section under Section 4, just to be abundantly clear, while this may be redundant, that meetings that are legally required, the employer should not bear any fear of reprisals in terms of a lawsuit for having a meeting that's required by the law. And I would just, I'm not authorized to testify on their behalf. I would point to the public record from the interim hearing that we were joined in our support by Adventist Medical Center, which is a 2,000 employee non-union hospital in Portland, and the Northwest Religious Liberty Association.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Shepherd?
All right. Thank you, Duke. I'm going to call up Sean Cleave and Jerry Schmidt, please. And if anybody, Mr. Wilson, you want to testify?
Yeah.
All right. Come on up. Go ahead, guys. We're going to school.
All right. Good morning, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee. I am Jerry Sibnett. I am a nursery owner in Canby and also serve on the Oregon Association of Nurseries Board of Directors and am currently chair of the Government Relations Committee. This is my first time speaking in front of a committee, and I appreciate you allowing me the time to do so. I am here to testify in opposition to House Bill 3653, the fix to the bill you passed in 2009, Senate Bill 519. The nursery and greenhouse industry opposed the legislation last year due to the fact that it impugned the integrity of hardworking nursery owners and how they communicate with the employees. As someone who employs workers, I do not have the time or money to waste by calling them into a mandatory meeting and discussing my political opinions or religious convictions. While I do appreciate the intent of the makers of the bill to make Senate Bill 519 better, it is, in essence, like watering a dead plant. You can do it, but it's not going to do any good. It is my understanding that the fate of the bill, 519, now rests in the federal courts, and my suggestion to the committee is to wait until the decision is made there. Thank you, Chair, for your time and the committee.
Thank you. Sean, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler. For the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. The Farm Bureau opposed the original legislation, 519. I don't believe that legislation reached this committee because it was an 11th-hour bill. And rather than focus on the technical aspects of why the Farm Bureau opposed that legislation, I'd just like to talk for a minute about the philosophical message that bills like this send. We're on the heels of a very massive campaign that exacerbated what I would consider a class war in this state. Not only are employers now considered by the majority of the public in Oregon as people who only pay $10 for the taxes, but now they're also considered people who bring their employees into a closed room so that religious and political opinions can be espoused to them.
Not everyone in Oregon holds those views, as you know.
I understand.
The record straight.
Yeah. Yes.
Forgive me for interrupting.
No, that's fine. But it does send a message. And it becomes very frustrating for my membership to see bills like this passed. If there were true problems regarding political and religious conversations in the workplace, I think the Oregon Farm Bureau would be more than happy to sit down with the AFL-CIO and interested legislators to address those problems. But this is kind of a shot across the bow. Actually, this is a shot into the bow of employment and employers in Oregon. And we need to take a strong look at what the message that bills like this send to the general public. I'd just like to comment on what was captured as a good faith effort to address some of the issues, that actually the Farm Bureau worked to address in committee last session. At no time was the Farm Bureau contacted regarding fixing Senate Bill 519 of 2009. If we were, we would have happily been at the table to have those discussions. I don't believe any other employer group that we work in collaboration with has been contacted either, so I wouldn't classify this bill as a good faith effort to capture all of those objections. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony. Thank you.
JL.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee. For the record, JL Wilson with Associated Oregon Industries. I have no doubt of the good intentions of the sponsors of the bill to help address concerns. My issue before you, as much as Jerry said, regardless of the changes made, they may make the bill better. In fact, we might be here a year from now with this issue having been settled in courts and say these changes are okay. But the issue is, from our point of view, the bill is still illegal, and it's just making the bill illegal in a different way. As you know, we have filed a federal challenge. It is in front of Judge Mossman in the federal court. We expect we're on a pathway to a summary judgment hearing date in early April, so it is going to be addressed relatively soon. Our request is simply that the committee hold off until the legal issues are finalized before moving ahead with fixes.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt, does Craig Buckwalter's wife work out at your operation?
No.
Okay.
We're just a small nursery in Canada.
Okay, all right. I'm confusing with enough. Forgive me. And I really appreciate you coming down here. And be quite frank with you, I share some of your concerns, and I can understand why someone may feel impugned by this. That being said, we have a whole statute over there that's all created because a few bad apples screwed up, and we had to put some laws in place. That's the problem here. And if we do nothing, then those small, minuscule, tiny percentage of employers, in my opinion, that will... you're exactly right. Why would an employer waste money, especially in this economic environment, to try to proselytize or indoctrinate an employee like me? It would be a very big waste of their money and time. But that being said, I don't feel I can sit on my hands and do nothing. And if the court does find it illegal, then it's illegal. But if they do, then I think we have accomplished something that needed to be done because of those. We have prisons full of a small percentage of people that just simply cannot control themselves. And in my humble opinion, there is a small, tiny, minuscule percentage of employers, not the people you represent. Believe me, I know many of them, and they're good, decent, fine Americans, and I wish we had more work for them and their employees. I just wanted to get that out there. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate, I think, the spirit in which you come, and I myself, have no intention of impugning your businesses, your members, or anything of that sort. However, I can tell you, hearing your testimony, I am confused as to the basis of your opposition to this bill. This bill, i.e. House Bill 3653 that is in front of us today. I heard arguments against the underlying bill, Senate Bill 519. That battle has already been fought, like it or not, and it's still continuing to be fought in the federal courts in front of Judge Mossman, a great judge, by the way. I have no doubt he'll sort this out legally very well. However, being that Senate Bill 519 is at this moment is law, can you point to me where this bill, Senate Bill 3653, regardless of what you think of 519, makes the existing law better or worse in some ways? Can you point to the specific sections, lines? I'm happy. I'm work with you. I'll mend it out.
Representative Barton, from our point of view, you're simply mending a legal bill. I'm not sure what there is to argue about there. We believe that 519 is illegal. That's our contention going forward. I would also say, you know, just having worked other issues, if I had, you know, working the medical marijuana issue last session, if I had a nickel for every time somebody said, let's not change it because it's being litigated in courts, I'd be a rich man. And here I am making the same argument that's been made to me on issues that I want. So, you know, to me, that's been a pretty consistent argument that's played well in this building. And at this point, I would just simply ask, let's let the litigation go forward. If it's found legal, you know, like I mentioned, we may well be in a position to support something like
that. And JL, for the record, that argument hasn't played well with everybody in this building.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. So I recognize that you personally and your organization, your position is that Senate Bill 519 is unconstitutional. Personally, I disagree. I think it will stand scrutiny. However, that's not our call to make. It's up to the federal courts, and I really believe in the judicial process. I'm sure the courts will sort it out well. But given that's your position in the interim, let's pretend. Would you oppose any bill, any change to Senate Bill 519 that made it more palatable to your members, simply because you believe the underlying bill is flawed? Would you oppose any change to it as a result?
If the bill was considered legal and established as legal by the courts, and there was something that make it more palatable, of course we would support it.
For the record, again, Sean Cleave representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. From the Farm Bureau's perspective, I think anything short of full repeal of 519 is where we're at. Now, for better or worse, that's a political reaction to the 2009 law. Now, if in the spirit of what the Oregon Legislative Assembly has been convened to do, if we could come together and have a real conversation with everybody represented at the table regarding political and religious conversations, not only from the employer's view, but employee to employee, and if those are true problems that need to be addressed, I'm sure that employers, labor unions, employees, the state of Oregon could come together and draft something that would be an appropriate reaction. However, we do believe that regardless of any changes that may be made in House Bill 3653, while it does provide some relief, and relief that was specifically addressed by the Oregon Farm Bureau in its testimony last session, anything short of a full repeal we'd have a problem with. So,
Chair,
follow up. Thank you, General. I do appreciate, I think, the spirit. I think I understand what you're saying. Again, I repeat that I'm hearing arguments against Senate Bill 519, not necessarily against the bill in front of us. And, for example, but I'm puzzled for the life of me. For example, the section removing the treble damages provision and to double back pay. For the life of me, I don't see how that's not in your members' immediate interest. I cannot understand how you can oppose that on behalf of your members. I don't get that. Please help me. How is that not in your members' interest to pass that provision right there in this law?
Thank you. Chair Schaffler, Representative Barton, again, our contention is that Senate Bill 519 is illegal, and until that issue is satisfied by the courts, we wouldn't be in a position to support any changes to it.
Mr. Chair,
one more representative.
No, I'm just
satisfied with where we're at at this juncture. But go ahead.
I'll pass.
You're fine, American. I appreciate your questioning, Representative.
I'm truly puzzled.
Any further questions for these fine gentlemen? I really appreciate you coming down today, sir. I do. Thank you very much. Anyone else like to testify on House Bill 3653? We do not have a fiscal or revenue impact.
Actually, we do. No, we do.
Oh, forgive me.
We do on the amendment. So because we have it on the amendment, we have it on the entire bill, so it is, which is no fiscal impact.
No, none.
Okay. Mr. Chair, also before we go on, I'm trying to print this out. I received electronic testimony from Jeff Stone from the Oregon Association of Nurseries. It has been uploaded to your committee notebooks. And I will, if anybody would like a copy, please ask. I apologize. We have a printer and the hearing room is not working, so otherwise we would have it in the back.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Anyone else like to testify on House Bill 3653? Because my intention is to move forward today. So, no one else wants to testify. I'm going to close public hearing, House Bill 3653, and I'm going to work session, House Bill 3653, and I'd entertain a motion to amend this bill. Do I have a motion, please?
Yeah. Mr. Chair?
Representative.
I'll make a motion to move the dash one amendments to the bill of House Bill 3653.
Representative Matthews moves to adopt dash one amendments, House Bill 3653. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the amendment? All right, seeing none, so moved. Representative?
I'd like to make a motion that we do pass recommendation House Bill 3653 as amended.
Representative Matthews moves House Bill 3653 as amended with due pass recommendation to the floor. Is there any discussion? Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chairman, I was out and missed part of the discussion, and I apologize for that. I was on some other legislative business. I'm having a hard time with our process on this bill. I guess a couple of things. One is I'm not sure what emergency exists that it needs attention in the special session. I like this language dramatically better, would be supportive in a general session of this language, because I think it's a nice, more moderate approach than 519 was.
I just have trouble seeing this as a special session kind of bill. I think special sessions should be addressing an emergency. At this point, there isn't one. There is a lawsuit, and I would be very fascinated to find out what that lawsuit ultimately says. I'm having trouble getting there to support this, although this is the language I would support. I've had some interesting discussions with people about it. This would be a dramatic improvement, but I just think it would be interesting to see where the lawsuit goes, and I'd like to know what their how that language stands up in the courts, and then make this adjustment, which I think on a personal level is as a representative is a very appropriate and needed change. But nonetheless, I just think it's a process issue, and I'm uncomfortable with it.
And Representative, I really do appreciate that. I guess as a proponent of the bill and the amendment, I guess the logical response would be if an employer is sued underneath existing law, this would actually give them relief if they're found guilty of doing this between now and whatever the court finds.
Yep.
So,
I understand.
And I appreciate
Catch
it. I mean,
22.
It's like making sausage. Sometimes it ain't pretty. I guess that's the best way I can put it. Representative Esquivel?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representative Kinnaman, but what also bothers me here is the people that this actually affects weren't at the table to collaborate with this to make it our plan instead of their plan or specifically us and them. That disturbs me. I think that it should have been a situation where you should have reached out for these people, sat down with them, and crafted something that they could buy into instead of doing this in a silo. So the procedure, I think, was not the best that I've seen.
Any further discussion? Representative Matthews.
I would just like to remind us, I think it was alluded to during testimony from AFL-CIO, but we had some stakeholders that were apparently involved, and they had testified in January. And to me, that was pretty clear. In fact, I complimented the groups by coming together because, quite honestly, not to characterize anyone or impugn any group, that was a group of religious freedom that came forward to say, here we are to testify in support of this change in this amendment. So I see where some folks were involved. I'm not going to say that everybody was, but I'd also say, welcome to the world as a legislator. A lot of groups are working around us as well to move things through because it's impossible to get everybody at the table. I'm not saying they're ignored intentionally, but quite honestly, the logic of, well, we would do it if that was legal, but we don't think it's legal, so we won't do it, despite it will benefit our members if we do in the interim, doesn't really hold for me. So I'm ready to move this thing.
Any further discussion? Is there objection to the motion?
Yes.
The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Esquivel?
No.
Representative Holby?
Yes.
Representative Boyle?
Yes.
Representative Kinnamer?
No.
Representative Matthews?
Yes. Aye.
Representative Patrick?
No.
Representative Wade?
Aye.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
No.
Chair Schaffler?
Chair votes aye.
Mr. Chair,
wait a second. Representative, what you want to say this bill?
Would you let me? I'd be pleased to do that.
Very good. Thank you very much, sir. Representative Cameron?
Yeah, I just served notice of a possible minority report.
Thank you, sir. All right, with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3653, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3651.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3651 is one of two bills that came forth in deliberations from the subcommittee. The measure subjects public works involving construction or the installation of solar energy systems to the payment of prevailing wage rates, and there's an emergency clause in the measure effective upon passage. The subcommittee recommended due passage on a 5-2 vote with the -1 amendment, which is in front of you. The measure adds some clarifications by saying that public works projects that are covered in the measure are just restricted to the premises, structures, or buildings owned by public body and also clarifies that the Bureau of Labor Industries can take any action before the measure's operative date of January 1st, 2011 on the amendments to ORS 279C-800, which is the definitions to prevailing wage rate law. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact with the Dash 1 amendment, and we do have the proponents of the bill that are available to answer questions for the committee members.
Would the proponents like to come up and add anything to this? Thanks, Bob. Come on. Okay, minimal meaning we can go forward.
Yes.
Very good.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity. I'm Bob Shiprack, Executive Secretary of the Oregon Building and Construction Trades Council. I only have a couple brief comments today because some of you have already heard this bill twice now, but there were some comments made in Representative Witt's committee that I feel I need to address because I really don't want to have a big hoo-ha over this bill. It is very, very narrow. It relates to electricians installing solar panels on government property. There was a determination by the Bureau of Labor that we disagree with, and I'm not here to debate that in front of this committee today. We're here to clarify what the law is. The point of what I wanted to say are 2 points. One, issues that were brought up particularly by Representative Escoval that what I thought were valid, I hope were addressed by the Dash 1 amendments. It's clearly government-owned properties that this bill applies to. The second point I wish to make has to go to some testimony that was given in Representative Witt's committee that I just want to refresh the committee's mind. The prevailing wage in Oregon is established by the Oregon Employment Department based upon surveys of thousands of employers, construction employers. Both Congress, the legislature, and the courts recognize that the prevailing wage is what we call area standard wages and benefits. That actually means something. That is, in fact, what the local construction market pays. For electricians statewide, this is the area standard wages is about 70% union scale. And some of you may like that, you might not like it, but that's the truth and that's the facts given because of the wage surveys. In the metro area where most of this activity happens, as far as the solar installations, it approaches 80%. I just want to reiterate to the committee that we're simply saying that area standard wages and benefits as surveyed by the Oregon Employment Department would be used on these installations. Thousands of my employers pay this, and there was assertions made in Representative Witt's committee that the lower you pay your workers, the better the benefits are for society and energy prices and all that. That I really reject that notion. And I'll probably just stop there, but it does bother me when folks say that by paying less than area standard wages, you're doing something good. And I think I heard that in Representative Witt's committee, and it really disturbs me. I've shared with you this committee many times studies that we've got. I can tell you more stories about contractors that underpay various standards and construction disasters that happen. The one study that I continue to point to is the productivity study by the Federal Highway Administration. We'll take Texas, who their average wage for highway construction is half what we pay in Oregon, yet their costs of highway construction per mile is almost double what we pay, or what it costs Oregon taxpayers. So there's no correlation between paying less and high productivity and high-skilled people. I just wanted to get that on the record, Mr. Chair.
Sounds like somebody's cutting a fat hog in the backside down in Texas. That's my
study,
own opinion.
The study showed their average wage was
like
$11 an hour.
Right.
Unbelievable.
So, while we have Bob up, Representative Kinnemer, please.
Couple of comments and a question, I guess.
Sure.
You know, it's interesting as I was trying to get a little bit more up to speed on this bill, I was told, I presume it's true, and it's kind of interesting, after our previous discussion about Representative Bailey's bill, that prevailing wage was originally a Republican idea.
Yes, it was.
And it was an effort to make sure that we hired locally and yep. take away the advantage that people had of bringing cheap outside labor in. So that was a, I was embarrassed to be ignorant enough to, actually I'd heard that before but forgotten it, but anyhow, and frankly I think within some limits that it works that way, and I, that's one of the reasons I've been supportive of it. I guess the other piece is that it's hard for me to, the prevailing wage applies to government properties, and it seems to me that in partly part of this is in the Betsy and the new games that are being played mm-hmm. with leases and ownership, funny stuff about what ownership is and financing things that make no sense because of the way you can fund it. And it's been a very painful lesson to me that not all tax credits are good. I guess... I really thought that was a silver bullet. It's a silver bullet with a little bit of lead in the center, as far as I can tell. Mostly it's a good idea, but boy, you need to be watching it. So I guess I am supportive of this. Bob, you and I had a conversation. I want to be assured that this is very specifically limited. That was the comment that is the determiner for me to government properties, because I think that's consistent with our past practices, and I want to be supportive of that. And I think there's a lot of conversation to be had about some of these other peripheral issues that have driven this.
Mr. Chair, if I would like to take the opportunity to follow up on Representative Kenemer's statement. The Davis-Bacon Act, signed in 1931, which is the federal prevailing wage law, Representatives Davis and Bacon were Republican congressmen. It was signed by President Hoover, and our Oregon prevailing wage law was signed by Governor Mark Hatfield. It's something that the building trades have not lost sight of, and we appreciate that.
Well, I know this much. I've worked on a lot of job sites, and a lot of my colleagues on them sites were stone-cold, hardcore Republicans, and they love to hunt and fish.
I wish they had more impact, sir.
wait a second. I have Representative Holvey, then we'll get
you. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure how to follow up with that. No,
We've been picking on the liberals. Sorry about that.
Frankly, you know, good ideas do happen from both sides of the aisle, and I've always recognized that. And this is one that certainly stands out in my mind, and Democrats appreciate that particular legislation as well. But I just wanted to, in our conversation in the subcommittee, I want to follow up with something Representative Kimmer also said was about prevailing wage, being focused on public property. And I just wanted to reiterate something that I brought up in the subcommittee, is that even the federal Davis-Bacon Act doesn't really consider public property as much as the triggering point of prevailing wages on the federal level, and in many states for their little Davis-Bacon Acts is based on the use of public funds. And that's the triggering mechanism. And at the federal level, and Bob, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the triggering amount is, if you use $2,000 of public funds, that's it. It prevails. It's a prevailing wage job. Doesn't matter where it is, what it is, what color it is, or anything else. It's just a matter of whether or not it uses public funds. And one of the questions about tax credits is it in fact you owe taxes, and here's your tax liability on your form. But we're going to give you a credit, off those taxes. And so there's an argument about whether tax credits are public funds or not. And in my mind, you know, you owe this in revenue to the state, and you're getting a credit back, but I would argue that tax credits are public funds, and that the state of Oregon should look at simplifying prevailing wage law so everybody understands what and when prevailing wages apply, and base it solely on whether or not it uses public funds. And we wouldn't have so much litigation and so much misunderstanding about when prevailing wages apply. And you know, I think it would be a great move for the state of Oregon, whether it's, you know, triggered at $50,000 or $2,000 or $500,000. At least we'd have a really clear line of when prevailing wage applies in this state. And I would love this body, this committee, to take that up next session and really see if we can get there, because I think it would take a lot of arguments and misunderstanding about prevailing wage out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. I share your sentiments. It's getting there that's the issue. I'd vote for a $2,000 trigger right now. I've said it before right here in this chair. But that would be an interesting conversation. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Getting into the discussion here of what's public funds and what's not, I guess when I deduct my mortgage interest from my state income taxes, maybe when I go to the grocery store, because that was supposedly money that was belonged to the state, based on that rationale, that I probably should, wherever I'm spending that organization should be paying prevailing wage because I'm spending state money. I don't know where you draw that line on tax deductions, as what we just heard. But I wanted to ask a couple of questions in regards to this bill. If a state purchases a solar installation top of this building, mm-hmm. are they paying prevailing wage to those electricians who are installing that project up on this building today?
And before you answer, Bob, I believe it's capital construction is where you draw the line of relating to this. Forgive me, go ahead. To answer your first question.
Let me answer that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Cameron. That goes to kind of the heart of what we're trying to settle here. What's going on out there are private developers are developing.
Let me ask the question again.
Okay.
I understand what you're going to. Today, if the state, the capital, hires or decides we want to put solar panels up on here, we are going to pay for those solar panels with state dollars. Are they paying prevailing wage for the solar installation of the electricians that are doing that
yes,
work?
Yes, they would.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So the other question I have, today, if a state building, for example, we have Willamette University over here on this side, which is a private university versus the Capitol, and what you started to say is if a contractor comes to the state Capitol and says, I'll pay you $5,000 a year to put solar panels up on your building, are we using, in your definition, are we, if there's income coming into the state for the privilege of putting those solar panels up on that building, you're saying that we're still using public funds even though that contractor would be paying into having those things installed and paying a lease over a period of time for using that particular property?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, the main way these are financed today are through oftentimes Betsy's, although it appears that may be getting phased out. Then the local government, or let's stick with the state capitol building,
through here,
they pay, there's probably a 10-20 year power sales agreement, so that the state of Oregon in this case would be paying the developer for the electricity that's generated and then used in our capitol building. So essentially, and some people have asserted this, the public is paying twice. Once through a tax credit, perhaps, and then secondly through the power sales agreement. Ultimately, in some of the contracts, because they're all different, ultimately after 10 or 20 years, the solar array that was installed reverts completely to the state capitol building, and they own it lock, stock, and barrel. So those are some of the some of the ways that this is financed.
I want to go back. You said that the public would be paying twice. If the public is actually being paid for the generation of the power up above, how would the public be being paid twice? The public paid for a tax credit. I understand
right.
that logic. We installed it, and based on the electrical contract
gotcha.
With the contractor, they're literally paying into the state. So how is the state paying twice?
Typically, the public agency purchases the electricity. They're paying off the installation and the power generated. The contractor doesn't give the state money.
But he would be saving the state money based on this contract. Well, I don't want to get into it, but the last question I have. So, if we have commercial property or private property across the street,
mm-hmm.
the same project could be done across the street at a different rate.
It could conceivably, yes.
Okay, thank you.
It's private,
totally private.
Excuse me.
Any further questions, Mr. Shipwreck? Okay, thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
All right, we have an amendment. My intention is to move the bill today. We don't have revenue, and it's minimal.
Yes.
With the amendment. I would entertain...
No fiscal.
I would entertain a motion to the dash one amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3651.
Representative Witt moves House Bill, the dash one amendments in House Bill 3651. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 3651 as amended with a dash one amendments to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Witt moves House Bill 3651 as amendment to floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Just a couple comments. All I could think of is, okay, yes, this rate is based on a survey that's sent out to thousands of employers or construction employers. And it's kind of like saying, okay, here's a set price, and now we're going to poll the same people who have to pay the set price and ask them, what price are you paying for something? Well, we're paying the set price. I don't know. So anyway, as an employer that has had to walk many times through the minefield called prevailing wage law, I would not want to expand it and inflict it on additional people. It does need to be simplified. I don't know if the simplifications presented by Representative Holvey would be what I'd want, but there are definitely some things that need to be improved in the law before we expand it.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion on the motion?
The motion, the amendment,
or is this the bill?
It's the bill.
All right. So there is objection to the motion.
Yes.
Okay. Then the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Esquivel?
No.
Representative Holvey?
Yes.
Representative Boyle?
Yes.
Representative Kinmer?
Yes.
Representative Matthew?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
No.
Chair Shelton?
Aye. Representative Witt, you want to carry this one too?
Mr. Chairman, I thank you very much for giving me that consideration, but I know that you and Rep. Holvey both come out of the building trades, and that may be something that either of you would like to
carry. Or I'll carry it.
No, I'd be happy to, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Close work session, House Bill 3651. Open work session on House Bill 3652.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3652 came out unanimously from the subcommittee. There are no amendments in front of you, no revenue, and there's a minimal fiscal impact on the measure. It requires the State Apprenticeship and Training Council to adopt rules that modify the circumstances in which an apprentice electrician may work without direct supervision if they complete a majority of supervised hours under their apprenticeship, which under the measure is 6,500 hours of training for a license that requires 8,000 hours of apprenticeship training, or has completed 5,000 hours of apprenticeship training for a license that requires 6,000 hours of apprenticeship training.
Thank you. This was unanimous out of...
Yes.
Was the entire committee present?
Yes. Yes. And there was no opposition on the measure.
No opposition.
In testimony.
Before I entertain a motion, is there any discussion or questions? We have the electricians in the room.
Was there fiscal, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, there's none.
None.
Yeah. All right. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Esquivel.
Mr. Chair, I move that we send House Bill 3652 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 3652 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Representative, you are on the committee. You want to carry the bill?
Be privileged.
Very good. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3652. And before we go, I ate some humble pie on the floor. I just want to, in this committee, say again to all of you that although I don't take back any of the content of my message, I was out of order, and I support these rules, and I have great respect for them and for our chief clerk and this body, and I hope, I apologize to you, and I hope you can forgive me for my outburst. Representative Esquivel.
Mr. Chair, you just saved me from apologizing because I believe what you said was 100% correct.
Thank you. Anything, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say that, you know, as we heard today and we'll continue to hear about businesses struggling and people getting back to work and the bill that was before us earlier that we're considering task force on, you know, local communities, local businesses have the ability now to shop local first and to try local first. And I say that because a lot of times a bill might not be necessary to encourage people to shop locally and purchase within the state. I know we're going to struggle through several things that we can or can't do in this session, but the immediate needs of the communities are there. I'm not asking everybody to shop in Gresham. I'd love if you did, but I am saying in your own communities, urge people to shop local first. I bring up an interesting point of a car dealership in our area that was up for a government bid, and unfortunately was told to sharpen the pencil because the dealership in Wilsonville was $7 cheaper. Now, I beg of you, why would an agency go somewhere else besides your local vendor for a difference of about $56? It's absolutely frustrating to me. And so this message needs to be clear throughout every community. It's not just our responsibility. It's everybody's responsibility to help pull together, shop local, try local first, and help keep people working and get people back to work. Thanks, Mr. Chair, for indulging.
Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, just commenting on your comments the other day. Again, I would quote General Caldwell, who said that we could eliminate 80% of the problems that this state faces as well as its citizens by giving everybody a good, decent-paying job.
Thank you, Representative. Anything else for the good of the order?
Mr. Chair, I just want to point out yet again that we will be having an agenda just to carry over the House Bill 3604, but we will not be meeting because we do need to carry that to next Wednesday. So we will not be meeting on Monday. We'll be meeting on Wednesday.
We're not having committee.
We will not be having committee, no. But I do need to put on an agenda to meet House guidelines for carrying over the bill. So.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much. If nothing else, we're adjourned.